Hello and welcome to ID the Future. This is Casey Luskin again, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And we have on the show with us again Dr. Wolf Eckhard Lonick, an expert in plant breeding research in Germany. He used to work at the Max Planck Institute until he retired recently. And we have Dr. Lonick on the show with us again to talk today with us about the law of recurrent variation and how plant and animal breeders have had difficulty producing radically new phenotypes through mutation breeding research. So Dr. Lonick, thanks again for coming on the show to speak with us.
Thank you very much, Casey, that we can continue our talk.
So how do you deduce the law of recurrent variation from the results of mutagenesis experiments?
Well, I have given some examples. And summarizing these results of mutation breeding and mutagenesis worldwide, one can formulate the law of recurrent variation as follows. Quote, one of my papers, treating homozygous lions with mutagenic agents generates large but clearly finite spectra of mutants. This consistently occurs when the experiments are carried out on a scale adequate to isolate the potential of alleles causing phenotypic and functional deviations, usually called saturation mutagenesis. However, due to almost invisible residual effects of changes in redundant sequences and/or further chromosome arrangements, the corresponding saturation curve is asymptotically approaching its limit for the microquantitative part of variation. This is a summary of the law of recurrent variation. It's a very important point which has to be added. Because mutations at different loci often cause similar or identical phenotypes, most traits are, as is usually known, polygenic. The curve asymptotically approaching the saturation line for the mutant genes is distinct from that of the mutant phenotypes. So, just to give a crude example, I mentioned by example here, if somebody gathers many hundreds or even thousands of computers still functioning, and he opens these computers and treats them with some screwdriver or hammer, and he will produce an almost endless variety of broken computers. But those computers, which will be still functioning, over, let's say 10,000 or something like that, will be a very minority. So to disrupt function, the possibility to disrupt function is almost infinite. But the possibilities to produce still functioning organisms after mutation induction, these possibilities are limited. This is what law of recurrent variation describes. The law of recurrent variation is a law which describes the phenotypes. And this must be clearly distinguished from the endless possibilities on the gene and DNA levels. By giving that rather crude example of somebody gathering computers and trying to open them and change them by accidental processes, to expect that by such a method, a totally new computer with better information, with better programs will be produced is a very optimistic expectation. And I predict that such methods will never be of any future success.
So Dr. Lonick, what would you say is the genetic basis for this law of recurrent variation?
One can do it very shortly and say there are only a limited number of genes which upon mutations can produce a restricted number of alleles, or in the words of leading plant breeders, and due to mutagenesis, as Micke and Donini, they said, quote, it is important to understand the unique potential offered by induced mutations, but also to realize the limitations of this tool. The first limitation is imposed by pre-existing genomes. And then the interesting sentence, genes that do not exist can neither be mutated nor be eliminated. And much more is, of course, to say, well, in one word, the limited number of genes can produce a limited number of mutations, and this is the basic reason that you get a spectrum of mutants, which can, of course, be very rich, but nevertheless is limited.
Now, Dr. Lonick, are there other research results or rules or laws to corroborate your deductions on this idea?
First, I would mention Vavilov's law of homologous series and variation. You find on my homepage a large chapter on that law of homologous series of variation, but there's an important difference between that law and recurrent variation. He concentrated only on homologous series in variation, but I concentrate on the limits concerning mutagenesis organism-wide. Then there is, of course, the law of conservation of information, which was formulated by Dembski. Then there are the examples of overlapping genes, showing that overlapping genes reduce the possibility of positive mutations. There's a general idea in physics by Granville-Searle about entropy, which is interesting for these results which we have found in mutation breeding. Then there are the publications of X and Gager on metabolic innovations and new enzymes. And there's, of course, a lot of function mutations can do in combination with selection. And I've written about that already. Lots of function mutations can be positive in special environmental situations. For example, flightless birds in animals living in caves. There are many examples. And B has now given, on the molecular level, such examples of losses of functions which can be positive for selection and adaptation, the adaptive mutations due to loss of function mutations. And this is also true for most of the mutations which have been found to be of any interest in mutation breeding. For example, if you have some poisonous substance in a plant, which otherwise could be eaten, and you delete the gene by a mutation, or you delete the genes which are responsible for this poisonous substance, then, of course, to destroy a function which can be useful for us as human beings or for animal feeding, then it can be interesting. But this, of course, doesn't explain how these genes originally originated.
And Dr. Lonig, can you make any predictions through the law of recurrent variation?
The law clearly excludes the origin of new complex functional sequences, that is, entirely new genes and new gene reaction chains for novels in organized anatomical structures and or physiological functions by random mutations. Losses of gene functions and the probability barriers to the origin of entirely new DNA sequences and functions, as well as anatomical features, are the window in which the law of recurrent variation describes its phenomena. So it describes its possibilities and limits of induced mutation for plant breeding and evolution.
Now, have there been any good objections to the law of recurrent variation, Dr. Lonig?
Well, to make a long story short, there was invective, abuse, tirades, harangue, but no qualified objections. My impression is that some people are absolutely determined not to understand anything which could be of interest in the biological world. Results as these, which have been reproduced 1,000 times and more often, and they simply reject them. But there are also some positive reactions. Professor Swaby from the Medical University of South Carolina has accepted that. It is also Professor Siegfried Scherer from the University of Munich, top university, and they made positive comments on the law of recurrent variation. One has to calmly accept these people which use invective and tirades and virulent polemics without really any qualified objections. As you know, Casey, many of these people are not even willing to carefully check these things which have been produced, not only as often is surmised by some religious dogmatics, but also by atheists. I have quoted several atheists which have fully accepted that mutations cannot produce entirely new life forms.
So, Dr. Lonig, just as a final question, how did you first become aware that there is irregularity in variation by mutation induction and that this is a problem that exists for neo-Darwinism?
It was in 1982. I was working in the experimental fields on Venusberg in Bonn, and I was evaluating several thousands of pea plants. And interestingly, there were certain pea plants, for example, there were four mutants which have been described as independently arisen, and when crossing them back, they produce a very interesting spectrum of rather similar mutants. These mutants are thought to be, or have been thought to be, mutated in several genes. And of course, I noted that many mutants had arisen independently in the original papers. I just quote one example. There's a mutant called Xanta. It's a yellowish plant with yellowish leaves, and this has appeared 27 times by radiation, 13 times. All this is practically virtually the same phenotype. By fast neutrons, 13 times. By acetylenamine, 21 times. By EMS, ethyl methane sulfonate, 6 times. By ethylene oxide, 3 times. By oxides, 3 times, and spontaneously, 8 times. You see, our table of such mutants with many phenotypes which regularly appeared. Interestingly, when I asked Boss in the University of Bonn, when I asked him, well, to make another mutagenesis trial with a pea, he said to me, it isn't worthwhile. You always get the same or similar mutants. All these defects in the photosynthetic apparatus and so on. And he wasn't interested to do it anymore. But later on the Max Planck Institute, I worked with such mutants, and they were induced by X-rays, gamma rays, in more than 500,000 plants, and also in others with mutants. And there was also the phenomenon of a regularity of very similar or identical phenotypes. And so I first became aware of such a regularity and variation due to mutation induction in 1982 in Bonn, Venusberg. And this was confirmed on the experimental fields with many hundreds of thousands of plants at the Max Planck Institute of Plant Breeding Research in Cologne.
So Dr. Lonick, if you could just leave our listeners with one final closing point, what would it be?
Mutation breeding does not work. And mutations, in generally mutation induction, does not work in producing new species, and not to speak of higher systematic categories.
Well, Dr. Lonick, we really appreciate your taking the time to talk to our listeners on ID the Future today and to explain why the law of recurrent variation poses a problem to those who claim that essentially unlimited amounts of variation are available to produce new species.
Well, Casey, it was very nice and fine to talk with you again about these important questions.
I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening to this interview with Dr. Wolf Eckert-Lonig on the law of recurrent variation.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.